This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host, the man who's too good to stop for a roadkill deer to check it out, Mitchell Shirk.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. And we are getting into the dog days of summer here. I feel like summer just started officially, but you know, I always feel like once turkey season's over, it's summer. And June's my least favorite month, and we're almost away from that. We're getting into July, and it's hot and muggy. So first of all, enjoy. Take some time, slow down, and enjoy the 4th of July. You know, it's 250 years of America this year, and I think we take for granted all the time the 4th of July and what that means. But there were some people a long time ago that came and took a big chance, and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and people fought for the freedoms that we have to be able to sit here and enjoy hunting, enjoy creation, all the freedoms that we have in this great nation. And as divided as we are in so many ways, this is still an awesome, awesome nation, and I take it for granted all the time. So take some time to just appreciate what this 4th of July is, and you know what this means, 250 years of the nation that we are. You know, the only thing, you know, like I said, there is a lot of ugly things that go on in the world today. The only person that you have control over is you. And the choices that you make to make your life better, yourself better, and the people around you, they go farther than you think. Little things go a long way. And I hope that you you take something from that. I wasn't able, normally over the 4th of July, I'd go up to my cabin and spend some time with family up there, and I wasn't able to do that this year. We have some other things going on the 4th, so I just went up this past weekend and had a blast, as I normally do. I love camp. I love to be there, whether it's just for, you know, hanging around with the family or doing something in hunting related. And of course, every time I'm there, it's always got to be one little thing or another for hunting. And I took a drive into some of the areas that I hunt or the surrounding areas, and just seeing the woods, seeing things change, and starting to brainstorm and start getting the blood flowing and the brain moving on things I want to look at. And I think this is the year that I'm going to really try my hardest to invest as much time upstate as I can. Now, I don't know that that's going to be a ton, but I'm really going to make it a goal to try to shoot this year's buck with the bow up at camp. I never did that before. I've been talking about it for so long, and I just haven't made it a priority and haven't done the work. And I feel like this year, in the summertime and leading into that time, I think I'm going to be able to make that happen and make it work in some way, shape, or form. So I'm going to begin the process. And I started going through some of my notes and conversations with people when we do group hunts, and you know, some of my scouting notes and pins, and started thinking about areas that I'm going to start to look and concentrate here in the summer leading into season. Whether I'm going to be boots on the ground, maybe run some cameras and stuff. But I'm getting very excited thinking about that. And, you know, one of the things with, you know, preseason preparation, it comes to your equipment. And I'm going to do a couple episodes here of talking about getting your equipment ready to go for this. You know, we spend so much time talking about the scouting and the preparation of the hunt, but I feel like we easily overlook shooting. It's talked about a fraction of the time compared to the game itself. And this week, I'm coming back to part two on an episode. We did an episode with my friend Chris Romano, the Wing and Tail podcast. We did an episode with him on arrows not that long. And he is a mad scientist when it comes into all the work and knowledge he has. And he really likes to dive into the science and the physics behind arrow flight and then implore that into his setups. And he loves to educate people on that as well. And we did a discussion about aerodynamics, and he had left us with there's also something to discuss about bow dynamics and your bow shooting as efficiently as possible. So we put a pin in that because that was right before turkey season when we had that conversation. We went through turkey season, and now we're back into the summer, and we're going to talk a little bit about bow dynamics. And it's going to go down a couple rabbit holes, from bow setup and tuning to, you know, optimizing the best arrow flight and everything in between. And I think it's going to be something that's helpful for us all as we think about breaking the dust off of our equipment and making sure it's shooting as efficiently as possible. Because if our equipment is, you know, that's going to help us and hopefully mask some of the mistakes that we have as we work through, you know, breaking the rust and dust off of our bodies as they age and you know, getting back into shooting form. So let's dive into this episode with Chris. Guys, take some time and check out our partners of this show. We're thankful to have them, and I think that they have something to offer you that will be helpful. So please, with no more, please check out Little Mountain Outfitters. Little Mountain Outfitters is a archery shop, Richland, Pennsylvania, that has got everything for bow hunting and beyond. Now, for those of you who aren't close to Richland, Pennsylvania, and you can't make your way in to check them out in person, you can check them out virtually at littlemountainoutfitters.com and check out all they have to offer. And if you use the code WOODSMAN10, that's WOODSMAN10, you can save yourself 10% off of your next purchase at Little Mountain Outfitters. Hey, with that, let's get to this episode. Back again for some more fun is my friend, Mr. Chris Romano. Thanks for joining me again on my show. What's going on, buddy?
Not a whole lot, man. You know, hectic life, got a lot of things going on, but really glad I was able to carve out some time, sit down with you, catch up a little bit. So I'm really looking forward to today's conversation. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. This is the time of year. It's the limbo as we go into bow season, as I think about it. And I'm getting excited thinking about the things I'm going to do to prepare this fall. And I've been holding off on shooting my bow because I've been dealing with some neck and shoulder stuff. But I'm feeling better. I'm ready to pick it up. I'm ready to start dialing in and figuring that whole thing out. And that's kind of what prompted our conversation. We had you on not that long ago, a couple weeks ago. We had you on. We went down more discussions with arrows, more rabbit hole discussions. And you know, you've been building arrows for quite a while, which, by the way, would you mind talking with people a little bit about what you're doing with some of your custom arrow builds again?
Yeah, sure. So let me see, I at least have an insert here. So essentially we have these little inserts. They're called the CTI, the carbon tube inner is what it stands for. And essentially we connect the insert, the actual insert, to that inner tube, marry them together so they're one piece. And then this entire tube gets glued into the front end of your arrow to create what we call Arrow Concept 1.0. And to keep it really simple, that tube vibrates at a different frequency than the actual shaft itself. And those frequencies cancel each other out, which allows your arrow to recover significantly faster. Essentially, a normal arrow will recover anywhere from 18 to 24 yards. And these arrows will recover within 8-ish feet. So the recovery rate is incredible. And it just allows your arrow to work a little less hard, to fly straight, which allows you to maintain more energy downrange, which has a whole lot of benefits, which, like as you said, we covered pretty well in that last episode.
We did. And every time we get into some of these topics, I feel like we barely scratch the surface because there's a lot of detail and there's a lot of information to it. But for those of you who are listening to this episode and what we plan to talk about, you know, it'd be good if you'd listen listened to the episode we launched back at the end of April, as we went in some rabbit holes of arrows and setup, and you know, Chris has a lot of good information. Check out his show and a lot of episodes he's done. So today I wanted to dive into a little bit about something you had mentioned about part two and having to deal with the bow itself and efficiency of the bow. And I'm looking forward to diving into that. But I got two questions for you that I'm going to ask you to get this started. And I'm going to ask them separately. And I'm going to start off with, what is one thing that you have seen come out in the world of hunting in your lifetime that you feel has completely changed the game for you as a hunter? It could be a piece of equipment. Oh, wow. It could be anything that comes to your mind. Something in your lifetime that you have seen come to the surface that you think has changed your hunting for the better.
Okay. So I'm actually going to answer this in two parts, because the first is obviously trail cameras. By the time I started hunting, maybe trail cameras were already around by the time I started hunting, but I'm pretty sure they came to be at least what they are today in my lifetime. But to keep things kind of in tune with what we want to talk about today, I really think the rotating mod on a bow has really given a lot of benefit to some people who maybe couldn't get the efficiency out of their bow in the past. Preferably, like Matthews, for example, probably has hands down the best mod system on the market, simply because they have a different mod for every draw length, which means they're able to maximize the output and the performance of the bow at every individual draw length. Right behind them would probably be companies like Hoyt that have ranges of modules rather than one mod that goes from the longest draw length to the shortest. But back in the day, when you used to change your draw length, you'd have to change your cams and then also change your strings. That system right there was hands down the most efficient for performance, because it tailored the bow, specifically the geometry of the bow and all that stuff, to the person's draw length, which allowed them to get the most out of the bow. Whereas today, most bows have mods or rotating mods. What makes, like I said before, what makes Matthews special is their mods are individual for each individual draw length. So the less range you have per module, the more performance you're going to be able to get out of that module on a bow.
Great answers. Now, part two, or question number two, is what is the thing that you think is the biggest hype that is blown out of proportion in the world of hunting today as far as products, gimmicks, whatever in your mind that is just overrun and not worth the hype?
Oh, I'm going to get flack for this one. Heavy FOC.
Okay, elaborate.
Heavy FOC. A lot of the studies that have been done with higher FOC were done by Dr. Ashby. Phenomenal stuff. The information is fantastic. And a lot of those things that he talks about needing to have good penetration is true. You do need perfect arrow flight. You do need an arrow that can withstand the impact and all that good stuff. But that higher FOC has a point of diminishing returns, where you have to give up trajectory in order to gain that really high amount of momentum or inertia through the impact. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, lighter draw length, really short draw lengths, or lighter draw weight shooters can benefit from the high FOC. But the truth is, these bows that we have today, they're putting out incredible, incredible numbers. To give you some perspective, I'm shooting the PSE Sicario right now. I'm shooting a 400 grain arrow at roughly 308 or 309 feet per second, and I'm a 27 and a half inch draw guy. Now, to get that, I had to reduce I had to get a shorter brace height, which we could talk about later in this episode. But with these bows that can hit higher speeds throughout all these different draw lengths, momentum is a calculation between your weight and the velocity, the weight of your arrow and the velocity of your arrow. And I'm actually working, my life has gotten so crazy that I've had to push this back a little bit, but I'm currently working on a test to do over the summer, because I want to prove that a lighter arrow that's traveling faster can have the same performance as a heavy arrow that travels a little bit slower, because it is a combination of the weight and the speed. there's a lot of things that happen also on in flight, on, well, on launch, in flight, and on impact with high FOC. We talked about that in the last episode also, so I'll just make it really quick. On launch, your arrow is going to compress more or flex more before the front of the arrow ever moves because the front of the arrow is heavier. In flight, now your arrow has to work significantly harder because the arrow is flexing more and for a longer duration in flight. And even if it's recovered at the point of impact, because the back of the arrow is so flimsy compared to the front, all of that impact vibration is going to show up in the back of the arrow. And now the front of your arrow has to pull this wiggling stick through whatever your target is. So I think high FOC has a place for some people. I don't want to write it off completely. I just think that it's been taken from that study and implemented in all of compound shooting, both TAC, you know, target hunting, in places where people really don't need them. And maybe they're getting some worse results on the back end than they would if they were to go a little bit lower and balance their arrow out a little bit.
Well, that's a great explanation. And like I said, that's for, I think, every archer to decide. I mean, you've taught me a lot and I've changed my setup because of some of the stuff you've taught me. So just to recap real quick, I said we weren't going to get in arrows, but you opened a can of worms, so I'm going to blame you now. So when you, if you Google the 12 factors of arrow flight, it refers to, as you said, Dr. Ed Ashby's famous 12 arrow penetrating enhancing factors. Accounts for perfect flight and everything else. And we talked about this before. The first two factors in order are structural integrity and arrow flight. And you said on the last show and other times, like, yeah, agreed. We can all agree those are very critical parts of this. But the third one in that list is our arrow forward to center, the FOC.
Yeah.
So based off of what I'm gathering is, in your lineup, that doesn't even come close to the top three.
No. Well, it does, but in a different perspective. So my arrow that I shot last year was a 7% FOC arrow. I think this year I've bumped it up. I'd have to remeasure it. It's been a few weeks since a few months since I've done it, but I think I'm sitting around 10% FOC with this newer arrow build. And I have to believe it's because I've gone to a 204 diameter instead of a 246. And that kind of changes the dynamics of things a little bit. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's a little bit less of a GPI, and the lower your grains per inch on your shaft, the more FOC you're going to gain because you have less weight in the arrow shaft. So my build is the same. It's the same exact build that I used on the 246. It's just because of the shafts that I'm using. It brought the weight down. It brought that FOC forward. But I do prefer a balanced arrow. I like an arrow that works as one unit as it's flying rather than being pulled from the front.
Hey, great explanation. I appreciate that. And I think it's good for us all to be thinking about that, because June, July, and August are the months that people go crazy thinking about the season upcoming. And you can often go down some rabbit holes and spend some money on things that maybe you do or you don't need. And I think it's good to get everybody's perspective of where is your investment before the season worthwhile and where is it not?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, especially today. I mean, gas keeps going from $4.75 a gallon to $3.90 a gallon. You never know where it's going to be from week to week, you know. So especially in a year like this or an economy like this, we want to make sure that the money we're spending is worthwhile and the time that we're spending taking care of stuff is worthwhile also. You know, so as we've said before, I just kind of like to share what I've found, and the things that I like or work for me. And if some people find it useful, great. And if not, all good, you know.
Absolutely. So let's shift gears, Chris, and we're going to start diving into the discussion of what you mentioned, and that was part two and bow. I think you said bow mechanics, or there was another way that you, dynamics, I think is the way you said it. And to me, the first thing I thought was tuned bow, shoot broadheads, I'm done. And I know, because I've known you long enough, there's way more to it than just that. So where do we even begin on this conversation, Chris?
So whenever I'm setting up a bow, the very first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to set my rest so that way my arrow is roughly 13/16 from the riser. That seems to be the industry standard, like the starting point. And then I'm going to move my cams to allow my arrow to be parallel to the riser as well. That's kind of like, that's where I like to start. And then once I have, once I've moved my cams with whatever tuning system I have, whether it be a yoke or, you know, shims in your axle, or a lot of the Bose these days, like Matthews, Elite, Darton, Hoyt, they all have tuning features that you can just turn something on the limbs or on the cam, and that moves the cams left and right, however their system does it. Mm-hmm. But my thing is, I want everything to be in line as perfectly as possible. So I want that cam, the string to run from cam to cam and straight through the center of my arrow while my arrow is sitting parallel from the riser at 13 16ths. That's going to give you the best, the most energy coming out of the bow and going into the arrow in a linear fashion. Mm-hmm. You know, and then when I set it up, I usually use a, like a bow vise. I'll put the levels on the arrow and on my bow. I'll make sure my bow is level. I'll make sure the arrow is level to the bow or perpendicular to the string. And then I take it from there. I'll be honest, in just about every other bow I've ever had, I do that and I get very, very, very close to a perfect bullet hole. For whatever reason, this PSE that I got this year, it seems to like a knock high D-loop set, just slightly. So once I went through it, I kind of ran out of comfortable adjustment. I never like to be too close to my riser shelf. So once I figured that out, I readjusted my D-loop, kind of started from scratch slightly, and I was able to get on paper and shooting bullet holes relatively quickly from there.
So my mind's spinning. The thing that was going through my head was just what I've experienced in the world of tuning in bows from the time I was 12 years old shooting bows and not having an absolute clue in my mind what to do with this thing to where I'm at now with some of the new technology. And to be honest with you, I haven't kept up with it as well as I used to. Probably the last 3 or 4 years, I've kind of fallen by the wayside in the new technology and stuff. But, you know, I remember as a kid dealing with, you know, poor flight of broadheads and this and that. And a lot of folks talked about, well, you need to tune your bow to your broadheads. And I've heard anything from you need to adjust your rest, shoot your field point, shoot a broadhead and tune it that way. And I've seen some and heard of some crazy tuning methods. And some of them actually kind of work based off of what the results are on target. But that's not necessarily what you're starting with. You're not starting with the quote-unquote accuracy of the arrow you picked off the shelf, the broadhead you picked off the shelf. You are trying to maximize the efficiency of the bow to start.
That's my goal always, yeah. And that's probably comes from the fact that I am a short guy. I'm a short draw guy. And I got to get every little bit out of it. Now, I will say that I used to be a speed chaser. Then I went to super high FOC. I was shooting a pretty heavy arrow. I think because of my short arrow length, I was at like 23 or 22.5% FOC at one point. So I've gone down that valley and done all that. But what I really just wanted to do this year is I went to the other extreme, went to 400 grains. I won't shoot a deer with an arrow under 400. That's just kind of my personal preference. But my new, I guess, project baby is my goal was to hit 300 feet per second this year, and not only hit 300 feet per second, but I wanted to show that I could do it accurately and put a broadhead on the front and shoot accurately with a broadhead and show that with good arrow flight, you open the door to being able to do more things. Mm. The golden rule in archery over the last however many years has kind of been that 280 feet per second. You don't want your arrows traveling more than 280 because funny things happen. And that is true. But the reason it happens over 280 and the farther over 280 you get, the worse your arrow flight can become is because 280 feet per second is where aerodynamics begin to take over. And as if your aerodynamics aren't correct and your arrows aren't built correctly, they're going to expose any improper tunings or anything that you have in your bow. So what a lot of guys will do is, you know, and I don't blame anyone. Some people have an older bow. They don't have like the tuning systems built into their bow or whatever the case may be. They start to adjust their arrows to kind of compensate for the bow. And what I like to do when I'm setting up a bow is I want my bow to be perfect so I could shoot the arrow that I want. Because the truth is, with a couple exceptions, some broadheads don't work for everybody. But at the end of the day, if you have a perfectly tuned bow that is moving completely linear, has no horizontal knock movement when your arrow is released, you're going to have an arrow that's coming off your bow as straight as possible. And if your arrow is coming off the bow as straight as possible, then you don't have to, you don't need to build an arrow that can mask those issues because you don't have them anymore.
That makes a lot of sense. So when you put, if you put a bow, you do all the math calculations, you get the arrows, you do your measurements, you do your leveling, you get everything set up perfectly. Then you go to shoot. You know, let's just say you have it set up by, you know, machine, hooter shooter, whatever you want, however extreme you want to get. And then you put the human influence into it. From your experience in your setups, how much do you affect or reduce the maximum archery dynamics from that bow, and how do you correct that?
I will say that probably the biggest hindrance on arrow flight, bow mechanics, whatever you want to say, is going to be the grip. A lot of times we have people come into the shop that are having trouble with their arrows. They can't get them to hit where they want or whatever the case may be. We work with their grip and all of a sudden their groups really begin to tighten up. And it's so easy to make a gripping error or influence your bow with the grip because, excuse me, I used to use the IQ sight. Now I have the Garmin digital sight. But both of those sights have a torque indicator built into them. So you can see if you're torquing your bow before you ever shoot. So since having both of those, I went from the IQ to the Garmin. I've really started to pay attention to my wrist and my grip hand and my form. And what I notice is just the smallest little tweak, whether it's, you know, you just turn your wrist a little bit that way, or you're pushing more with your palm than the upper, or vice versa. Anything you do differently from shot to shot with your grip hand is going to influence the bow. So the hooter shooter is a great place to start if somebody has access to them or if there's a shop that has them. But the hooter shooter is perfect, and humans are imperfectly perfect. So when it comes down to it, you have to tune, you have to make sure that you're shooting your bow and that it's tuned to your shooting form. It's the same thing with a shotgun. You know, if you, or a rifle, everyone's cheek is at a different height. How you rest your head on the gun is going to be different. And if you pass the gun to somebody else, could they hit the target? Sure. Are they guaranteed to hit the bullseye every time the same as you? Probably not, because everyone's shooting mechanics are just a little bit different.
So when you go through step one, as you discussed, walk me through step two. Walk me through how you may have to make changes to the bow setup in order to maintain the maximum efficiency. But, you know, you mentioned the grip as being an influence. What other things are you having to tinker with in order to maintain the specs that you threw out there with your new PSE?
Sure. So the biggest thing, the one thing I forgot to mention before when I'm setting up that rest is the burger. There's for the listeners who don't know, the burger hole is that hole that's just above the shelf on your riser that goes through the riser. It's not threaded, but it's there to, as far as I'm aware, it's there to help you indicate where that center shot is. Right, so center shot on a bow is when you draw your bow back, where is the center of that riser? Where is the center of that string? If your arrow is going through the center of that string, when you draw your bow back, you're going to have the farthest possible apex to that draw point. Whereas if you went a little higher or a little lower, you're reducing that. And I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, that's your power stroke. So if you have your bow set at, like when I set up the rest, I put it in the up position and I make sure that the arrow is running directly through the center of the burger. Some people like to put the bottom of the arrow through the center of the burger. Other people do it a little bit differently. I used to be a bottom of the arrow through kind of guy. But after working at the shop and talking with some people, I've switched over to putting the middle of the arrow through the middle of that burger. So now I know that that's where I want the arrow. So I step up to the line. I like to shoot a bare shaft arrow if possible. Just a personal preference. If you only have fletched arrows, that works just fine as well. And I'll shoot a couple. The biggest mistake I see people make is they'll shoot through paper. They'll see the tear on the first one. They'll go to the bench to fix it. Well, I like to take three or four shots with the same arrow before moving anything, because I want to make sure that it's a consistent tear in the same direction. You know, if I had a bad grip on one shot, or, you know, if I pull too hard through my back wall, that's going to influence the paper tear. So I'll shoot a few of them and then I'll move whatever I need to based on that tear. If you have an up or down, like a tear high or a tear low, we're talking knock low, knock high, then you could just, knock left, knock right. You could take your rest. Wait, hold on a second. No, I was right the first time. If you have a knock high or a knock low tear, you can take your rest and bump it up or down slightly. Mm-hmm. But what that means is if you had your arrow set dead center of the burger, and now you have to move your rest up or down, what that really means is your D-loop wasn't set on the same plane as that burger hole. So you could either move your rest up and down to adjust that, or you can move your D-loop to get closer. And then if you have a left or a right miss, and you want it, like I said, I want to keep my arrow at 13 16ths whenever possible.
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
I can either go to my cams and shim my cams left or right to bring that tear closer to the center. Or I could take the lesser of the two evils and I could go and I can move my rest. If I'm really, really close, if it's a really, really close tear, then maybe I'll usually take the rest and I'll bump it left to right to fix it. If it's a quarter inch or more of a tear, I'm going back to the cams and I'm moving the cams to try to fix that. So I really try my best to keep my...
All right, guys, you know me and I love eating wild game. But I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef. And that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
I arrow where I set it when I'm setting up the bow and use the tuning features to kind of fix that left or right tear if possible. Up and down, the only way to do that is to move your rest or to move your D-loop, and I'll try to move my D-loop first if possible.
But to understand this, you know, correctly, so like years ago, I remember like you'd do everything you just said, and then if you had an inefficiency with some of the older technology we had, a lot of the time, or a wrong tear, a left tear, a right tear, there's a number of factors that could be, but let's say you rule out obstruction as one of those, a lot of time people would tell you just adjust the rest a little bit left or right, which is, like you said, it's taking the bow out of its maximum efficiency with that power stroke down the center of the arrow. Now, you're gaining that as you move the cam cams and stuff, but as you start tinkering with the position of the cams, whether that's your yokes and twisting the yokes and stuff, do we lose efficiency when we start going down that rabbit hole, or is it still really, really close for the majority of shooters?
So I found, I actually did, I took the bow when it was out of tune. I shot it through a chronograph, and then I shot it again once the bow was set up in tune, perfect bullet hole. And I gained anywhere from 1 to 2 feet per second by making sure my bow was in spec. So, and then you also got to worry about the axle to axle and your brace height being accurate. And as you're, when you move your cams, you're not going to mess anything up with that. Usually that comes from changing strings on your own or having to change cables or something like that. But, if you haven't shot your bow for a while, if it's sitting in the garage or, you know, down in the basement and you take it out and something doesn't feel right, the first thing you're always going to want to do is measure off those specs and make sure that your bow is still in spec, because those numbers that you see in the book or the IBO when you go to buy a bow, they're going based off of a perfectly tuned bow with their arrow that they like to test with or whatever the case may be. But it's the same thing with a vehicle. If you have a car with a really bad wheel alignment, are you going to get from point A to B? Sure. But the ride's going to be a little bit rougher. Your tires are going to wear down faster. You're going to have less, you're going to have lower gas mileage, you know? So when everything is working straight, you're going to get the best out of whatever it is that you're trying to do. In this case, setting up a bow.
So I've been somebody that has gone down the rabbit hole in this with my bow. I mean, I have a, I'm still shooting an old bow. I get a lot, I'm starting to get made fun of. I'm at that point when I have a 10-year-old bow and I'm getting made fun of because my bow and it's not keeping up with the times. But I have a Bowtech. It's one of those, you know, yoke system bows where I can put it in a press, I can twist yokes, and I can get it tuned. And the first time I learned about that binary cam system and being able to play with it to tune it, I really gained, I gained a lot of knowledge. I started to flirt with understanding what you're, you know, teaching us all about in this episode. But it took my broadheads to a new level, and it took my shooting to a new level, and I started shooting better and having more confidence with broadheads and more confidence at a longer distance. And then you get into the world of really micro-tuning and adjusting to the point where some of the shop owners and shops that I've dealt with, and they start talking about the things that people like to want to worry about and focus on, that they're almost being too pesky. So how do you know where to draw the line, Chris? And that's a very vague question, but seriously, like when you think about it, how does the hunting shooting style that you are doing, how do you know when the line is that we're starting to be a little bit too anal and we're worrying too much about things versus the basics, like shooting well, you know, the right measurements of stuff, balance, you know, form, all that stuff. Like, how do you, and it's hard for anybody to make that claim for somebody else. So where's the line for you? Like, where do you say, now I'm being a little bit too picky, I need to focus on the, you know, the picture, the big picture. I don't know if I'm making sense of the way I'm wording this.
I got you. Well, first off, everyone needs to leave you alone about your bow because you shot that thing damn well last year when we shot. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know? I'll be honest with you though, Mitch. I keep trying to push the line. For me personally, I keep trying to push the line. I reach it and then I want to push it to that next level. You know, when I was doing my heavy FOC arrows, I wanted to see how high I could get that FOC. Then when I went to my balanced arrows last year, I wanted to see how balanced I could get it. I got it to 7%. I probably could have gone a little bit lower if I wanted, but that also comes with some of its own challenges of its own. I didn't really want to mess with all that stuff. I guess at the end of the day, the line for me would be the point of diminished returns. Like, have I reached a point where I don't want to say I'm not getting anything out of it, because the things I'm doing are kind of for education, you know? So there really isn't a diminished return for me, because either I prove what I want to prove and now we go to the next step and keep pushing it, or I disprove it. I share that with the community as well. And then we start to build from there. But if we're talking about just the general archer, the general target shooter, the general hunter, I think you kind of draw the line at, if you could be honest with yourself and say, that's accurate enough for me to shoot at a living animal, I think that should be the indicator for anyone who is going out and hunting. You know, broadhead flight is important. If you're having one arrow hit left, another arrow hit right with broadheads, I don't know that that's the most ethical thing to go out into the woods with, you know? So I would say put for the general listener, anyone doing this kind of stuff, push the line as far as you personally need to be content and confident that you can make whatever shot you're willing to take and that it's going to be an ethical one and your arrow is going to be able to perform when it reaches that target. You know, and that line is going to be different for all different archers too. You know, if someone's a new archer, I would say go to the shop, work with your shop, get your bow shooting well, get accurate, and shoot whatever broadhead you need to that's going to hit as close to your field points and build from there. If you're a seasoned archer, you've been doing this for a while, you know how to tune your bow, you know how to make a good shot break, in my opinion, you don't have an excuse to not get perfect arrow flight. You know, so I don't think it's like a blanket answer for all archers. I think at whatever stage you are is going to have a different line, but at the end of the day, that line should be whatever's ethical for you.
I think that's a great way to look at it, and everybody has to draw that line for themselves, and I think it's good to have perspective when it comes to doing that, because I think we can, like, I have plagued myself and gone to the extreme in some of the things that I thought and tried to do when it comes to my bow, and I get to a point where it's like, Mitchell, you're not that good. You're not as good as you think you are. You think you're really, really good, but you're not. So, like, I have to draw that line some point, because if I stress over a lot of little minor details, they might not be the problem. You know, I'm thinking about this from the perspective of long-range broadheads, right? You know, if I start shooting 80, 90, 100 yards just for practice, and I'm not, you know, I'm thinking I have a perfect clean release and hold and everything else, and I'm you know, tweaking off, like, I start to get to a point where I think I'm doing so well that, you know, it might be an equipment setup. There could be a tuning flaw in there, and it very well could be. But the problem is I don't shoot enough and well enough to really dive into that sometimes. And I also sometimes don't have enough time in order to dive into it. So I have to draw a line somewhere to say, look, where's my ethical distance? How do I maximize accuracy, efficiency, all that stuff for me? And then run that best setup that I have and stick with it and ride it out.
Yeah. And the other perspective of that too, and I've said this ad nauseum on my show, where for me, it's stacking all the variables on my side. As many, there are 100,000 things that I can't control in the woods. I can't control if a deer moves when I take the shot. I can't control if the wind blows when the arrow is in flight. What I can control is that my bow is set up perfect. My arrows are built perfect. They're all built the same way. And I can stack all those variables in my corner, because those aren't human things. Those are mechanical things that can be made perfect. I'm imperfect. So if I have all of this, and I know I'm going to sound like a gear snob when I say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. If I have my equipment as perfect as they could possibly be, and my arrows as perfect as they could possibly be, and I make a silly error in my shot process, I know that all of my gear is set up in a way that it's going to give me the highest chance of my inputs not affecting the shot as much. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Whereas, you know, if you have a bow that isn't tuned well and you torque last second, that torque is going to exacerbate the improper tuning in your bow. You know, so there is a little bit of a give and take there as well. And I'm usually cautious with saying stuff like that, because it comes across as saying if you're a new archer, you need all of your stuff to be perfect to make up for your impurities. And that's not really what I'm trying to say, but I guess in a sense, it's kind of a backdoor way of saying that. But essentially what I'm trying to get at is, if you have good equipment, if it's set up properly, like, think about a car. If you have a really good car, but, you know, you're not the best driver, it could mask the fact that you're not the best driver, you know? So there is a little bit of something to be said with that.
That's what they do with all this autopilot stuff on the car when it's yanking the steering wheel from you.
Oh, dude, the first time I drove a car like that, it freaked me out. I'm trying to, like, hug the left side of the lane. It's trying to pull me back to the middle. I didn't like that.
Oh, I love it when I'm, like, driving down a country road, and I'm always doing the turn my head to the left, turn my head to the right. Is there any deer out in this field? And my car's beep, 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 beep. It's, you know, I'm getting over to the shoulder. I'm getting over to the median. It's like, shut up. And I think, it's probably good I have that stuff, because I guess I drifted more than I realized. So so for those of you who are hearing that, stay away from me while I'm driving on the road.
Real quick, we've been mentioning broadheads quite a bit, and I just want to really quickly touch on the importance of why the tuning matters when it comes to broadheads. And some people may know this, but I'm going to share it anyway. When you shoot a field point, the field point is very narrow. It comes down to one point that doesn't have any wings. So if you shoot your bow straight, let's say you shoot, you know, you're shooting and your arrow is coming off your bow at a little bit of an angle. There's no wings on your field points to catch any air and to redirect your arrow. It's just going to fishtail a little bit, and your veins are going to work a little bit harder, and it's going to straighten your arrow out and get it to where you want it to go. But in the case of, let's say, a two-blade broadhead, if your arrow isn't coming off your bow perfectly straight and it comes off on a little bit of an angle, well, now what's going to happen is that two-blade is going to catch air, any amount of blades, for that matter, is going to catch air and start to push your arrow or plane your arrow in the direction that the point was facing at launch. And now your veins and your arrow have to work even harder to get that arrow flying straight, because it has countering forces, or the countering wings, in the front of the arrow with those broadheads. So that's why it's so important to have your arrow coming straight off your bow, because it's taking the point of your broadhead and sending it directly into the direction that it needs to go, so it can't plane on that launch.
Which is why it's important to spin test your broadheads when you insert them, just to make sure that the threads and everything else are lined up. But if it's spinning perfectly and you're having problems, it could be a tuning flaw.
Yeah. And then the last thing with that too is, and this is something I learned recently, when you're setting up a two blade, when you put it on your bow, you want it to be directed from 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock to 12 o'clock, up perfectly up and down. Because if all of your arrows are set up with the spine on the top, your arrow is going to flex up first, or up first. So what happens is that arrow is going to cut through the wind in an upward direction as it's getting launched off the bow. And if your broadhead is perfectly vertical, it's just going to slice through the air on that initial flex, and it's not going to have any air to catch. Versus if it's, you know, horizontal or cocked off to a corner, or God forbid, all of your broadheads are indexed at a different direction, you can't guarantee that every arrow is going to come off the bow on the exact same plane. And again, that goes back to stacking all those variables. If you know that all your broadheads are facing the exact same direction and all your arrows are going to flex the same way off launch, you're going to get the most straight trajectory coming off the bow.
Do you find that when you start dabbling with the speed thresholds, like, do you find it's still, even under all these things we've talked about with the last episode, aerodynamics and the bow, is it still really hard to get broadheads to fly better, specifically fixed blades, or is it possible?
So last year, I believe I was shooting 284 feet per second with a four-blade broadhead, and I didn't have any issues getting it to hit. At first, I did out to like 50 or 60 yards, and then I realized that I was having an issue with my rest at the time. It wasn't dropping on all the shots. It wasn't dropping fast enough. I ended up replacing it, made a couple of adjustments, and we were able to get that squared away. I haven't gotten a chance to shoot the broadheads with the 300 plus feet per second yet, so I don't have an answer for you on the higher speed. What I do know, though, is we got a lot of guys who like to shoot fixed blades out of a crossbow. And if anyone knows the speeds these crossbows are getting these days, some of them are well over 400, 500 feet per second. And they're able to shoot accurately with those. So for myself, I haven't been able to do any testing, but I do know that it is possible to build an arrow with a fixed blade broadhead that flies extremely fast and still have good arrow flight. Some of the trade-offs, though, are going to be a vented broadhead is definitely going to be better for you in the higher speed versus a perfectly solid broadhead. And also the rotation, the amount of rotation that you get on your arrow from your veins is also going to affect how well a broadhead flies or it doesn't. So for me personally, you know, we talked about this, I think, on the last episode also. The veins that I use, they're rotating over, I think with these new ones I put on, they're rotating over 200 times every 20 yards, which is significantly higher than any other vein that I'm aware of on the market. So when it comes to my personal setup, I know I have an arrow that's rotating extremely quickly. So I'm not even going to try to mess with those fully solid broadheads. I'm going to go with the vented personally. The trade-off is you're going to get a little bit of like a hum going down range. Some people talk about a whistle in a vented broadhead, but the whistle usually only occurs if your bow is like pretty badly out of tune or something wicked is happening with your arrow while it's in flight. But other than that, I mean, the broadhead should be able to fly as long as the tune on the bow is done correctly.
So, you know, going back into my old school bow here with the old yoke tuning and stuff, I remember when Bowtech had come out with that binary. I think Bowtech was the first one to bring the binary cam system, and PSA was right there or something. Doesn't matter who was first. I just know I had one, and that's what I was playing around with. And I remember, you know, talking with shops that were familiar with that technology and how they would tune the bow, and it was kind of mirroring what you were talking about. And then you go to another shop that, you know, they had other bows on the shelf, and maybe they were tuning it, I'm just going to say, the old-fashioned wear stuff. It seems like all these bows have come leaps and bounds, and they're all pretty darn efficient and pretty user-friendly as far as setup. So when you think about the bows that are out there on the market, are they all pretty user-friendly in being able to accomplish the stuff you're talking about?
Yes and no. I don't want to do any like brand bashing or anything like that.
Oh, you can brand bash all we want. We're not sponsored.
Okay. That's fair. I worked on a Bear not too long ago, that wasn't the easiest to work on simply because in order to shim the cam, I had to pull the axle out, but the way the limbs are kind of set into the pocket, even when you press the bow, there's still outward pressure on the axle. So I wasn't able to pull the axle without stripping the limbs completely off of the riser. Then I was able to pull the axle out and I was able to do it. And essentially that's the old system, right? Before, when bows had yokes, you could still pull the axle. You can mess around with those spacers. You could flip them from the left side to the right side or whatever the case may be. But before, I think it was Bowtech might have been the first company that came out with a cam adjustment system with their deadlock technology. And then there was Bowtech and Elite came out roughly around the same time. I think Bowtech was the first one. And Bowtech moved your cam along your axle, whereas Elite moves the entire limb pocket left and right. Hoyt has a new tuning system. I think it's the FDX tuning system. I could be wrong with that. Don't quote me on that. But you're able to make the adjustments to individual limbs. And on the Hoyts or any split limb bow, you technically have four limbs. You have your top left and right, your bottom left and right. And on the Hoyts, you can adjust all four. And from what I understand, they're the only company that allows you to fix an up and down tear with that tuning system as well. Elite has their Easy 220 system where it's still a spacer system. You do still need to press the bow, but not because you have to pull the axle. You just have to relieve a little bit of pressure off the cam so it can slide. And they have this device that you just literally pop the shim out, you pop it back in, and whatever shim combination you use has to add up to 220 thousandths of an inch, I believe, total between the left and the right side. So Matthews has a great system too. I forget what their system is called, but they have the one where you turn the knob and it moves one limb left and right. It's the limb shift. Yep, the limb shift technology. Theirs moves it left and right. Let's see. I'm trying to think.
Does Darton have anything?
Darton might be the most tunable bow, the new one that came out. Okay. It's being touted as the most tunable bow ever made. They have a, you can shim the cams. They have something in the limb that you can turn and it adjusts the height of one of the limbs. So if you're tear left or right, you could balance out the limbs. They have a timing feature that you don't have to press your bow. You just have to screw it in. They have quarter inch adjustments. They have a performance mod or a comfort mod. It really is phenomenal. I would say if I had to gauge, I would probably say that that new Darton this year is probably the most tunable bow of all time. And the Elite is right behind it as probably the most personalizable, if that's even a word, bow for a shooter. You could change the valley. You could change the valley. You could change the let off. There's so much that you can do on these bows. I will say the new technology has made it easier. Some companies are easier than others, but for the most part, even Bear came out with this. I forgot about that. Even Bear came out with a tuning system this year on their higher end models that's similar to the Darton one, where you turn a screw and it adjusts the one of the limbs, I believe, at the pocket, if I'm not mistaken. And I just talked about this on my podcast a couple weeks ago, where do I think the tuning systems are necessary? No. But I do think that if you have the extra $100 or $150 to spend on a bow that has it versus one that doesn't, you could relieve a whole lot of headaches. Because going back to the broadhead tuning that we were talking about before, the old school way is if your broadhead, now I could be getting the direction wrong here, so don't quote me on that specifically, but let's say your broadhead is hitting left of your field point. You want to move your cam to chase your broadhead. So if your broadhead's hitting left, you want to shift your cams left, and that should start to bring your field point and your broadhead closer together. Well, if you're out on a range, like for me personally, if I wanted to go shoot broadheads here, I'd have to drive almost an hour to the closest range where I'm able to do that. Well, if I'm out on the range and I just drove an hour and I don't have a bow with a tuning system, I'm shit out of luck until I could go to the shop or I could find my own press or do whatever. Versus if you have one of these bows that have the ability to tune stuff on the spot without a press, you can make minor adjustments and overhaul whatever you need to on the spot and not have to leave 100 times just to be able to do what you want to do, but be able to leave once you're done finishing what you went there to get done. So I do think there's a benefit to the tuning systems. I do think they make life a lot easier, but they're also not necessary in achieving your outcome. It just makes life easy.
Makes sense. Well, one of the last things I wanted to ask you is the very generic question, but as we're sitting here, June, July, and guys are starting to, like me, are starting to think about picking their bow up and getting ready for season. We got a few months until the season starts. And, you know, mine sits in the garage hanging on a hook, and, you know, some people have them in the case or whatever. So we hear a conversation like this, it makes people question, you know, is my bow going to be shooting maximum efficiency? You know, what should I do to start? So, Chris, what should I do before I start getting hot and heavy into shooting and preparing for this season to make sure I'm doing as well as possible? What should I do to start the season up right, in your opinion?
Well, the first thing I would do is just give it a once over. Take a cotton ball to your limbs. Make sure that the cotton ball isn't catching anything on your limbs. If it is, you have a split limb or splinter. You're going to want to get that replaced immediately. Check your strings. Make sure there wasn't any weathering or anything that happened to them, humidity, buildup, or whatever. Make sure your strings are in good shape. And once you have that, the only thing really left to do is measure your axle to axle and measure your brace height. Because again, you want to make sure that those are in specs. That changes the feel of the bow. That changes the draw weight of the bow. Last year, I had an issue where I think I was actually shooting with you. Excuse me, the R100, when I realized that I was getting ridiculous peep twist on my bow last year. And when I finally got it back to the shop, I found that all of my specs were off. Either the string or the cables had stretched beyond repair. I needed to get them fixed. And if I would have just measured it on the spot, I kind of would have had an idea of what was going on rather than being frustrated through the entire day. Not that it would have changed the day, but at least I could have adjusted, I guess, what I was doing to at least get through the day with a little bit less stress. But just make sure the bow is in good shape. Make sure that it's safe and it's in spec and everything looks good. But the real indicator is going to be when you get out to the range. If you know your bow is on and you hung it up and you didn't do anything to it, and all of a sudden your 20-yard pin is hitting high, low, left, right, and not like a little bit that you can chalk it up to, you know, you're just a little rusty. Like if you're way off, especially if you're way low, there's probably an indication that something happened with the strings or the cables, and you just want to get it checked out, get it back in spec, and you should be able to get back to the races.
Good deal. Chris, I appreciate you sharing some of this information, educating me, refreshing me, and helping some people listening. Yeah. Chris, you've got to...
I'm sorry to cut you off. I do have one more. If we have the time, I do have one more thing that I'd like to talk about.
Go ahead.
Weight and noise / vibration of your bow. Everyone knows that if you make a heavier arrow, your bow is going to sound lighter, sound quieter, and it's going to have less vibration. I never put two and two together, but I just found out recently that the vibration is what creates the noise. The noise that you hear is the sound of your bow, your string, and everything vibrating. And one of the things that I've done to this new bow, but also the last two bows that I've had, is I've put titanium components into my bow. I've replaced my limb bolt. I've replaced the limb bolt with titanium, my axles with titanium. Any screws or bolts or fasteners on the bow, I've changed over to titanium. And even my string stop, I replaced with a titanium string stop. And titanium has two benefits to it. The first is it's lighter than steel. So titanium, I believe, is 45% lighter than steel. So if you take off all of your steel components that can be replaced with titanium and you replace them with titanium, you're going to drop the weight. Now, I will say that a string stop that is made out of carbon is going to be lighter than titanium. But titanium also manages the vibration a lot better. To give you some specs, every time vibration passes through titanium, it's reduced by 90%. So as it applies to a bow, when you release that string and it hits your string stop, it needs the vibration has to go somewhere. So it's going through your string stop, into your riser, in all directions, out to your limbs and all that good stuff. But it also bounces back towards the string as well. So if 100% of the energy hits that string stop, it's getting to the riser with 10%. And then bouncing back with 10% less than 10%, which is 1%. So essentially, in one trip forward and back, that titanium string stop is reducing 99% of the vibration in your shot. I posted this on my Instagram after I did my episode. And I'll be honest with you, I got a little bit of flack. People were kind of giving me some grief, about the titanium or whatnot. But the truth is, it works. When I shot this Sicario at the outdoor show, I shot it at 60 pounds, not 70. And I'll be honest, it's one of the loudest bows I've ever shot because the limbs are so pre-stressed before you even start to draw. And there's so much energy getting released from that bow that it has nowhere to go. So I put on a sight, I put on a rest, I put on all this, all these different things, and I changed out to titanium. And I never shot it without the titanium other than shooting it at the outdoor show. When I brought it to our shop is an indoor range that is literally a sound chamber. It is just 10 by 10 rectangular prism that is, just a shooting lane. And when I shoot the bow in that lane, now I hear one thud and it is dead. There is no noise whatsoever. And I took off maybe about 100 grains of weight total because, like I said, I took out all the steel components, but I also took the carbon string stop out and replaced it with the titanium. For me personally, I don't mind the weight so much. I'm looking, as everything else we've talked about today, I'm looking for performance. I'm looking to reduce noise. I'm looking to reduce vibration because any vibration that gets put into your bow is also getting put into your arrow, which again is going to make your arrow work a lot harder to try to fly straighter. So if there are things that you were asking about, the new tuning systems and stuff like that, there's things that you can do to an older bow that maybe won't make it easier to tune or make it easier to set up or whatever. But there are things that you can do to your bow to make it perform a little bit better and make it feel a little bit nicer and maybe help you hold out for a year or two before you have to go out and spend some more money on the bow. But all those extra things you add on your bow, your stabilizers, your string dampeners, while some stabilizers are probably better than others, but I will say putting any stabilizer on your bow is better than putting no stabilizer on your bow, both for balance, but also for that vibration reduction. Because the argument is the arrow is coming off the string so fast, do I even really feel the vibration before the arrow leaves the bow? Maybe, maybe not. I would need a high-speed camera to prove or disprove that. But I could guarantee you that the vibration is getting put into the arrow before it leaves the bow. Because the moment the string hits the string stop, the vibration is induced, and it's a fraction of a second after the string hits the string stop that the arrow comes off the string. So if we're looking for the most performance out of our setup and the highest performing arrow in flight, yeah, it starts with perfect arrow build. It starts with perfect arrow bow setup. But the final touch on that is to induce the least amount of vibration on the arrow at launch.
Well, with that, folks, that was a lot of information, and I'm glad you shared it with us. There's a lot to that. Chris, you've got the Wing and Tail podcast. Where can people follow along?
The Wing and Tail, I believe on YouTube, Instagram, I'm pretty sure it's all the same. I'm pretty sure it's Wing and Tail underscore outdoors. If it's not underscore, it's dot outdoors. Anyone wants to reach out to me, email me, ask any questions, seek information, look for some arrow type stuff. You can reach me at wingandtail.chris@gmail.com. Always interested in talking to you guys, sharing information, and kind of bouncing ideas off everyone.
Good deal. Chris, thanks for this very, very awesome knowledge dump as we go into the preparation season. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mitch. Can't wait to catch up again.